Welcome to the Round 13 Supercoach Coach podcast. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. I would ask you how your weekend went, but I'm a bit afraid of the answer.
As you know, huge week for me. So yeah, very happy. 24-38.
That's huge.
Last week, I'm pretty glad that on the show I didn't blow my call about Roughhead, because 184 he delivered this week, and that's absolutely huge. I was hoping for like maybe a 150 for his big score. 180 is just bloody beautiful. So back in the top 1,000, very happy at 705, and it was the first week without a single rookie on field for the team. Kiggins will probably go together with Watson this week for me. How'd you go, Mark? How was your Supercoach weekend?
It's a very frustrating week, I think, for a lot of coaches out there. It's so many mediocre scores around the 50 to 100 mark. I mean, even Dangerfield only 72, and Bartel 80. Just plenty of really good Supercoach players just never really got out of first gear on the weekend, which really limited my score. I mean, I had Murphy and Stevie J both scoring in the 80s. It was just a frustrating weekend, but somehow managed to go up. I brought in Jentsch last week, 38. That's very disappointing after 127 the week before, and got a bit of concussion. Hopefully he gets up this week. Ranking is now 1152, so sitting just outside the top 1,000, and I'll let you get about 160 points this week, which is a bit disappointing.
Our teams have gotten quite different now, I guess, over the course of the season, so it can swing back in just a week's time. Anyway, we'll move on to the questions now from social media, as always, from facebook.com/supercoachcoach and at supercoachcoach on Twitter. We've taken the questions there. So we'll start off with this week's first question from Reese Usden, and he's asking about at what point do you settle on your team due to trades, Mark? And pretty pertinent as we're running pretty low. Where's the cutoff point for you? Where are you drawing the line? And are you going to gun for that old premium team or not?
It is a really tricky question, and even if you ask a whole bunch of really good coaches, you're going to get a lot of different answers. My philosophy in the past has always been that I would probably have a few extra trades by this stage normally, and I would be looking at 8 or 9 trades left to be settling, and it's almost one a week on the run home. I think you've had the same situation happen to you, though, Marcus, is if you do take that approach, you end up with a bunch of trades in the last few weeks with nothing, no way to really make use of them, and sort of wishing that you'd used them earlier. So yeah, I think I'm going to go a little bit harder this year. That was my strategy from the start, and I just want to see what happens. And I think that I'm probably willing to go down to about 5 trades. I know some people that are willing to go even lower than that. So yeah, I'd probably be aiming for fully upgraded. A little bit depends on whether you want to win your league games. If you've got a real focus on leagues, you probably want to take 4 trades into finals. So you probably want to keep that 7 or 8 at the moment, and then maybe even hold off on all your upgrades, just unless you're down the bottom 8 or struggling to make the finals. But if you're in top 4, you can probably take your foot off the pedal a little bit for a couple of weeks. But yeah, I'm probably going down to 5 or 6, and I haven't quite made my mind up on that. What about yourself?
Watson's certainly thrown things up a bit, so I was thinking go down to 5 before Watson was going out, but if I have to train him out now. He's out for 8 to 10 weeks, for those of you who haven't heard, with a hip injury, so that'll put me down to 4. So at this point in time, I'm happy to settle on that. So I'll be with 4 trades left, I think, with 9 rounds to go, and I think that's cutting it pretty fine, but if those 4 trades go as planned, that will include Martin, Stefan Martin, who a lot of us will be bringing in, and we'll be talking about him soon, 112 on the weekend. It'll include him on the bench together with a Ford premium at about 400K. So it's a pretty deep bench, and my strategy has been to push the trades and to even try and push the trades to get good bench cover, and you know, hope to cover short-term injuries that way rather than punting on an impy type to score a 117 in the week that you need him. So
yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. I played Cameron last week and he got about 30, and then I could have had impy 117 this week. It can be a bit tricky, that one. Bit of a roll of the dice. So going to 4 seems really, really low, and I reckon there's a whole bunch of coaches out there that are really good coaches that are going to be stopping a lot higher than that.
We'll move on to the next question now, and it's with relation to downgrades, Mark. CJ Foster wants to know who he can get if he's looking to downgrade for cash, and it's pretty dry down there, Mark.
It is. There's a couple. We've got Zach O'Brien in the mids at 100,000. Jeez, if he came along, That would be fantastic. 23-year-old mature age player. Got on media street last week. Got a bit of attention. Been sub first two games. Did play a half a game in that first week. You'd think that Brisbane would want to give him a fair shot, but then Robertson looked really good when he was in the side as well, and they've got Cutler as well that are both sitting out of the team that you'd think that they'd want to get some more game time into as well. So, yeah, I think that he's probably the pick of the rookies this week, but, I mean, he's been the sub 2 weeks in a row, so a little bit hard to get a good read on him. The other one is McGovern up forward, 122,000. Looked pretty good on the weekend against the Hawks down in Tassie, but I just wonder whether he's just playing because Josh Kennedy was out, and when Kennedy comes back in that he'll go back out again. He looks pretty decent at a lot of times and contested marking situations, but probably has pretty low job security. So I think the other downgrade option that you want to get to is Stephen Martin, which is a bit of a left field sort of pick.
I was actually thinking really hard last week about whether or not to go for Martin over Goddard, and I just chickened out because that's leaving 300K on the bench, and you know Goddard's been scoring 100 plus every week, and he was about to rocket up in price. So all right, went Goddard, and who would have thought 112 and Goddard goes in 76? Like, come on. One of the lowest scores for his season. Anyway, Martin talked about him last week. He's come on and really relished that opportunity. We did mention he wasn't quite ready in terms of fitness and he was rushed back a little bit, but, you know, just really did well in the occasion and expect him to probably be a bit sore having to back up after his first AFL game back. But I expect that while Leuenberger and West are out of the team, he'll continue to score pretty well as that number one ruck. We mentioned he did well with that at Melbourne. Surprisingly, Mark, on the injury list, Leuenberger, 4 weeks only.
Didn't expect that at all. I was a bit surprised. I swear there was only a week ago it said 7. It'd be really interesting to see how that pans out. Do they really want to rush him back? Is there any need for him to play another game this year? Like, just get him right and get him ready for next year, you'd think would probably be more appropriate strategy there. But if he does come back in 4-5 weeks, then that really does affect Martin and would make him a far less good pick this week. But I mean, it's hard to predict 5-6 weeks in advance with an injury like that, because at the start of the year I sort of said maybe people shouldn't pick Ryder because Bell Chambers would be back after round 5 or 6, but it wasn't really until round 8 or 9 that he came back. So I think that something similar could happen to Leuenberger, and it might actually get dragged out a little bit further than 4 or 5 weeks.
I think if you have Thurlow in your rocks,
lucky bastard. I didn't think that was ever going to come up and be a factor with all the DPPs, ruckman being shipped, but now Thurlow and Martin could prove very handy as the year goes on.
Yeah, so I think even with the risk of Leuenberger coming back, if you got Thurlow, you probably take that risk. He's 240K. The value is ridiculous if he pans out. Some people would even be looking at cashing in Derek's now down to Thurlow and then bringing Martin in through the forward line and bringing in cash potentially two ways, like Higgins down to Martin, Derek's down to Thurlow buys you a huge upgrade. You could take Akers all the way up to a premium midfielder the week after that. So it certainly opens up some plays, Martin coming on late in the season. And when a lot of us were looking at some cash generation issues, he potentially could be a savior for us as a ruck forward flexible player.
There's a few issues that I wanted to talk about. Are you bringing him onto the ground or onto your bench?
I'd be happy to play him on the ground if you need to, but my ideal situation is to have him on the bench so that he can serve as cover. If you set up your MPP so that you have, a Lewis Taylor type in your midfield bench, then Martin can essentially cover two lines. If you extend that even further to have a Swallow type in your actual midfield on field, a Jaden Hunt type, let's say, on your backline bench, you could even effectively cover a backline player. So the possibilities with MPP are pretty wide ranging, and I think in the ideal scenario, you'd probably like to have Martin on your bench. And at 240K, that's probably realistic for a lot of people.
If you don't have Thurlow, would you still bring him in?
Probably not as critical, but personally, I think the value is too good to pass up. How about you, Mark?
The problem that I have is that if Martin fails, I only have Impey and Cameron behind him, and I don't have a lot of ways out. So, like, especially if he failed in the shorter term and didn't get his price up, there wouldn't be many backup plans for me, especially with getting low on trades. That has me worried a fair bit. The biggest concern, really, it's not Leuenberger, it's not his form or scoring potential, it's his injury history. I was reading today he'd done 3 hamstrings since November. that doesn't sound great for a player that you're bringing into your team. And he was sort of worried about the fact that he might never play AFL again. And he talked about the fact that they've changed his weight program and his body feels better now. But three hamstrings in that time doesn't indicate anyone that's really in control of their injuries and what's going to happen to their body. So that's probably my biggest fear, is that like this week or even the week after, he picks up a hamstring injury or something and can't play anymore, and his price is stalled in that 270 or something, or 300 bracket. And that would be very difficult when you're low on trades.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point, Mark. So,
but I don't want to talk people completely out of it, because I do think that if he can stay fit and the ruckman are out, I think that he's a really good pick. Like, he has excellent scoring potential. He's 27 years old. He can kick goals. He can get the ball at ground level, take marks, move the ball around, get hit outs. He is a good player. It's just sort of the injury that worries me.
Now, on to this week's hot topic, Mark.
Oh, we haven't even gotten to Job yet.
Yeah, Jobeth. So,
Job, you're f***ing kidding me. Just looking good. Just f***ing coming into the second half of the year. We're going to finally have a better second half of the year than the first half of the year. And our best f***ing player, captain, gets injured. And he's out for the rest of the year. Not just a pissy little ankle or hamstring or anything. F***ing gone till finals. This is shattering. And he's in my Supercoach team.
It's pretty horrifying news for Essendon supporters. And yeah, you'd be praying for your midfield to hold it together, and so that he could hopefully play some final series. And
no, I don't see it happening with that, Joe.
On the Supercoach flip side, I suppose there might be a few points up for grabs in the Essendon midfield, maybe. Anyway, we'll look to replacement options for him now, because everybody wants to know just who to bring in, Mark. So we'll go through Ablett, Pendlebury, Beams. Most people have them, so we're not going to talk about them, because most of our listeners at least started with them.
Most of our listeners would also have Salwood by now.
So yeah, we're not going to cover him as well. But yeah, we'll talk about the rest. So first guy off the ranks is probably the guy who's the highest scoring potential, and his form has shown that so far for the year, JPK. He's the most expensive of all the options, Mark, at $657,000. And I guess he's been pretty expensive for a while now, in under 20,000 teams. So he's a real unique player for how bloody well he's scoring, and for his pedigree, the fact that he's done it before. So
if I take Martin, I'll be getting JPK for Watson. Do you think that's smart?
Yeah, I don't mind it, because as we go through the options tonight, I think we'll sort of get to the point where we realize that most of the good options are either priced pretty fairly at an expensive price tag, or you're taking a risk on a value option that does have some concerning factors to their selection. So I think if you have the cash, and you would if you go down to Martin, then you might as well pick the absolute best. There's no point stinging that 10K and going Rockliffe over Kennedy, in my opinion. Yep. I would just pick Kennedy.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. It's either going to be a wing guard and a cheaper option, or JPK and Mark.
So you'd have JPK then, I'd assume, comfortably ahead of a lot of the options that we've listed. Rocky, Libba at that price tag, I guess Callan Ward, Kieran Jack.
Love Rockliffe. I think I couldn't see myself paying 640 for him, though. Just too much.
Callan Ward at 588. And I mean,
just keeps churning it out.
We've had questions about him, 115 average, and that's despite one poor game of 48. So he's lifting it with just consistently high scores. Kieran Jack, I've also had questions about, because he's hit 110 now, I think 7 weeks in a row. And we've seen him in the past go on a period where, you know, he can average 125 for a stretch of maybe even 6, 7, 8 weeks. So he's obviously a consideration. With Kennedy just tearing it up, you assume Jack doesn't attract the tag, which he managed to steal off Kennedy at times last year.
Sydney are playing well, Jack playing well. That seems to be the case the last couple of years.
Of all the options that we discussed, from Kennedy to Jack, I'd actually have probably Kennedy first and then Jack second, I think.
Oh, wow.
Just because of Jack's price. But I've been a fan of Jack in the past, and he hasn't quite delivered on the 115 average. So
yeah, but he's sort of threatened to for quite a while now. Just lacking those huge scores this year.
We've got to talk about another Sydney bloke, because Hannabury's been killing it, but he's probably the riskiest of the three.
Because he got tagged a lot last year, because he's the most outside, he seems like the most taggable and probably is the most taggable. The first three or four games of the year was like, what's happened to Hannabury? Why is he so out of form? And then he just went bang, and he's back into his star status. He's a real good player, but I think I'd rather Jack at a very similar price.
And then the players that we've talked about the last few weeks, start off with Goddard, Mark. So obviously there'll be implications. What do you think there'll be with Watson going down? How will that affect Goddard?
I think it'll give him an increased role within the side. My personal opinion is I expect the tag to go to Heppel, Zaharakis, maybe even Stanton before Goddard. So I don't think it should affect him like that. If Essendon can find a way through this and win games, Goddard will be huge in the next 10 weeks. If Essendon drop off, which is probably the most likely scenario, then Essendon's share of the points will also drop off and Goddard may be involved in that and struggle to get to 110 from here.
I'm certainly worried because I traded him in last week, and the fact that Watson's gone down, I wouldn't have picked him if Watson had gone down the week before. So I would probably caution people against picking him now just because of the uncertainty more than anything. When you're paying so much money, you rather make sure they bang out 115s every single game.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Next to Fife. So we've been waiting for his price to drop a little bit, and it has down to, I think, 550. His break-even's still high, 149, so it'll still drop a little bit. Worth waiting for, or just pull the trigger this week?
It's kind of a bit hard, depending on who your bench player is in the midfield. It's a little bit hard, because Joe is not playing this week, obviously. Last three scores of 104, 76, and 109, probably a little bit worrying. Their draw is pretty tasty, though, and that's one of the main reasons why you would pick him. And half-time in the game on the weekend, I was very worried about him because, I mean, he'd had his ankle injury the week before, seemed to be really struggling with that, had hardly scored in the first half, and then just went bang in the second half and kicked a couple of goals and got up to 109. I'm a little bit worried about Fife at 550. I think that he has the potential to be right up there, but it wasn't a small ankle injury, and it's got to be affecting him in some way.
I'm pretty gung-ho about Fife. I'll probably just say that first. I pinned him for a top eight spot for most of the year. To me, his scoring indicates that he'll do exactly that. I know he's been disappointing, but still, even though he's been disappointing in the last 3 weeks, that's dragged his average down to 114. His lowest two scores are still 76 and 104. And even though he's been tagged a lot, he's managed this level of consistency. Even though he's banged up, and we've seen him banged up in the past, he still manages consistency. And I think probably the main thing I'd look forward to is the fact that Fife occasionally has really, really big games because he can get ridiculous contested marks, kick goals, and get lots of posies. Now, they're about to embark on a huge run, and we haven't seen him score a 160-type score. When that score comes in, his average will look really, really sweet, and all of a sudden, perception on him will change. And that's just my sort of call, and I'm excited to pick him up personally. And listeners probably know that because I've been excited for a couple of weeks now. And yeah, I'm probably at risk of talking him up a little bit too much, but I'm pretty hot for him. He's rated, top five in the survey of all the AFL players, and I think that's for good reason.
Yep, absolutely. Probably struggles a little bit with disposal, but should win a Brownlow 1 year the way that he plays, as long as he can avoid suspension.
Murphy, a similar price mark?
Oh, it's so frustrating, Murphy. He's finally added the big scores to his game, but he's also added a few smaller scores. So 150 and then 88 the next week. I don't know whether I want anyone else to join that ride. It hasn't been the greatest one.
Nicky Dow, similar price.
With North's draw, I'd take Nicky Dow.
And then the last guy that I have on the run sheet's actually also from Frio, Mark, and that's Mundy.
Is capable of going on a big run of scores, is capable of averaging 120 over a shortish period. Hasn't been able to prove that over the course of a season yet. Seems to have copped the number one tag in a few games as well. Really like David Mundy. Wish he had come to the Bombers a few years ago when we went after him. At his price, seems like a decent pick. Would you take Mundy or Barlow, though? I'd probably take Barlow.
Have Mundy ahead of Barlow personally, as a player at least, but I think considering they have a nice run coming up, I think you want the most outside to benefit the most from that, and I think Barlow's probably the most outside of those three mids, so you could actually end up scoring pretty nicely over this next stretch.
Stevie J at 516,000, he's had his three poor games. There's plenty of reasons why you'd be thinking, geez, he can't get off the tag, he's never going to score well again. If there was one player that has the potential to go 130 for 5 weeks or more and is cheap, it's probably Stevie J. I mean, I paid 630 for him. He does seem to be the pick of the midfielders on potential upside this week.
Definitely. He's my number one target for the week and he's ahead of five for me, but I'll probably...
What's going on with him, mate? You traded him in, you traded him out, I traded him in.
Yeah.
This 2 years in a row, he's completely screwed me.
You
keep telling me to bring Steve Jay into my team. You've got through my head and I do it and all he does is cause me pain.
He had that one terrible game, that 53. And then the 92 and 84 is pretty in line with what we see from Stevie Jay nowadays because he doesn't quite get as many goals as he used to. So sometimes he'll just have a solid game where he gets that 80 to 100 sort of mark. We've seen him score 79 earlier this year when he was tagged as well.
He was solid against Sydney. He wasn't solid against Carlton. He was atrocious for three quarters.
The reason you pick him is because when he goes bang, it makes it all worthwhile. And the fact of the matter is, this is a much better version of Stevie J than the one I signed up for a couple years ago. Back when he was risky in the forward line, yeah, sure, he'd still get the 150s, but it was punctuated by scores like 20 and 30 mark when he used to get like 5 or 6 free kicks against. So this is not too bad, and I can assure you he'll turn it around. As you know, Geelong have a much nicer and friendlier draw coming up, so he'll be the one to capitalize on that. As you know, you've experienced some of the highs in the past as well.
Mainly lows.
If you had to number the best buys for the week this week, who would you have as your top three best buys?
JPK for point scoring, Stevie J for value, and then out of the middle of that pack, Fifey seems a bit expensive. He brings a lot of excitement to your team. Him and Jack would be tossing up for that third spot.
I would have Jack in there, I would have Fife in there, and I'd have Steve Johnson in there. I know I've talked up JBK, but when I paid full price for SJ this year, it didn't work out too well. So I think Jack's good enough value to sort of sneak him ahead of JPK if he can average 115. Pretty similar to yours, Mark.
Very similar.
The non-traditional picks are typically the ones that give you the real edge and are the ones that end up on top. It's just, it's a lot riskier trying to pick those types of guys. Rocky, Libba, they could very well blow up in the second half of the year as well. So completely understand people taking them.
Normally we do see a few players, not just one, but a few players in the midfield that have huge second half to the seasons that didn't have huge first half to the season. So as Marcus indicated earlier, it's really difficult to predict who that player will be. But there's probably three guys out there that are going to average 115 on the run home that are not averaging over 110 at the moment.
And so don't lose hope. You can still find a gem in the rough. All right, next question from Jess the Five here. Is it worth trading a DPP Hanley Parker type to fill your final midfield spot? So we actually had like 3 or 4 questions along these sort of lines, so had to put it in there, Mark.
I think it's a really, really good question. So say, for example, I know a few people have Job and Tyson in their midfield, and Tyson just 37 out of nowhere on the weekend. I know he got tagged, but when he did get off the leash in the last quarter, he just could not hit a target. So in that situation, you don't really have a lot of money. Say you don't have any cash and you have Job and Tyson, you can't really get 2 serious premium mids, but what you might be able to do is get Stevie J and Parker into your mids. Now, Parker seems like he's going to score 10 points less, maybe 15 less than some of the other premium mids, but then you get an opportunity to have some DPP switches in with your midfield. And I'm noticing a lot of the top teams do seem to have one of those players that are pickable in another position, a premium in their midfield. So I don't think it's ideal. I think you'd really like to rather have like a Shenton on the bench or something, but teams seem to be doing it and getting away with it, and it seems to be working. And if you don't have Parker already, he seems like quite a good pick too.
And I think I mentioned that I sort of went along this route or planned to go along this route a few weeks ago, and that was just purely to solve a cash generation issue. And the plus side to that is that it really allows you to stretch out your back or forward benches. Like we mentioned, it's been tough to find value and you're often trading to unreliable players. So instead of now having to rely on the Buse or Cameron in your forward line, you can now use that swing player in your midfield to cover your back or forward lines if you take an MPP player. So those are a couple of things to think about. I think as Mark said, the idea would still to have the MPP functioning as rookies on your bench and having a genuine full premium 8 midfield team, but it seems to be working.
So is that a yes or a no?
Big tick for me. I'm already doing it.
Okay.
You?
I wasn't sure. I really wasn't. I was really interested in your answer because it's not something that I've really gone with in the past, but I do seem to be seeing it working.
Because I've set up Swallow in my midfield, my forward line covers all 4 positions. I couldn't find any decent back forward player, so this was another way to create that MPP link. On to next question here, and it's about Coxie. We've had like 3 or 4 questions about him. He's only in 16,000 teams, so a few of our listeners must quite like him. But 78-62, and Nick Nat's really emerging. He's getting less run time. So time to go, or?
Gee, that's a big call. I personally haven't really been watching him that closely, but I have been watching Nick Nat, and Nick Nat looks fit. He looks ready to go in a way that I haven't seen for quite a while with Nick Natty. You can just even see him going in for a ruck contest. He's actually moving side to side and trying to get around his player, and just his intensity of movement seems to be quite high. Quite interesting that the number one team has Dean Cox.
Wow. Must be his only weakness, I'm guessing, then.
Pretty strong everywhere else, including the bench, but Dean Cox. And if you're in number one spot, 487,000, would you be considering trading Cox?
Depends on how many trades, but I probably would be.
Cox to Nick Nat is the obvious one, is that right?
For cash generation, yeah.
Just because you get cash out of it as well, and Nick Nat does look like he's in form.
Yeah, because you want to have a way out if the player that you trade in happens to get injured, and you do run a risk by fiddling with your ruck, so it'd be nice to at least have a little bit of cash to help mitigate that risk. All right, last question here, Mark, and it's a bit of a cheeky one. Lawrence is asking, Buddy Yo-Yo continues, and he just cleared the MRP. Could FB Donkey be the first coach to go Franklin to Zorko to Franklin back to Zorko?
Yeah, that's very funny, Marcus. I'm really glad you put that question in there. And no, it won't be Franklin back to Zorko. Zorko could potentially come back in, yeah. But it wouldn't be for Buddy. So, look, it's not working out so well that...
It's not quite Franklin to Zorko, but Franklin went out and back in and Zorko's going out and back in.
It might happen. There's no guarantees there and it might not happen. But Zorko has a break even of 4, so if it was going to happen, it would happen this week.
I would personally steer you clear for this bandwagon.
I've missed every one of Zorko's good scores. Like, it's insane.
That's actually the real reason I don't want you to pick up Zorko.
A selfish reason. The worst part is, I mean, watching Buddy on the weekend was watching the Buddy that was in my team at the start of the year, giving away free kicks, not kicking goals. It was like, oh, now I remember why I got rid of him. Yeah. And then just to make things better, Tippett goes and gets injured, and we're back to how we were before Tippett got injured. And
yeah.
How they can put three people on Buddy, and I can just eat shit, I guess.
Well, I've got him too, mate. Oh, who do they have? They've got Port Adelaide. Oh, that's tough this week. And Richmond, GWS.
That's easy game.
West Coast. So, yeah, that's okay. Not too bad. Port will be tough, I suppose. He might get a 30 this week or something.
No, and this week. It'll be fun.
And that wraps up this week's show. So we hope we help you out with your Watson dilemmas for those of you who have him. Gone through Zob and McGovern for those that need the rookie option. And yeah, that was pretty much it for the show. Getting down to pretty specific scenarios.
Yeah, if you could, it is. Probably both of us are going to be running out of trades in the next couple of weeks. So maybe we'll just jump on and twiddle our thumbs. No, I'm sure there'll be plenty to still discuss and plenty of people that won't have burnt through all their trades. If you couldn't tell before, mate, I'm pretty pissed about Joe.
I really wouldn't like to be in that scenario. So yeah, feel for you, mate. Hopefully your Supercoach team turns it around for you this week at least. Yeah, all the best for this week's trades, guys, and we'll catch you again next week. See ya.
See ya.